You are listening to Radio Albion.
Welcome to the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today is the 25th of October, 2025. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I've not been around. And it's because I've been in the hospital for 4.5 days, a litany of things. Nothing life-threatening, but I was in an awful lot of pain. And this is what happens when you let things go. I haven't had a doctor since in a decade. So, you know, you let things go and it eventually catches up with you. High blood pressure, among other things. So I've been out for a few days. I'm all right. I'm like 80% recovered. And I'm back to work. And we're going to start off now. Something I've been thinking about for some time. And I haven't done research into it. Before I left for the hospital, I had this already done. And we're going to talk about it tonight. And that is the city of Dubai. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, the city of Dubai has been pushed everywhere. It's everywhere. In the last 10 years, Dubai is all over social media. Celebrities are suddenly talking about it, like it's a destination of all destinations. It's only for the wealthy, high-end shopping centers, all kinds of things like that. The phrase cosmopolitan luxury comes up in the propaganda over and over again. Just 30 years ago, Dubai was a minor fishing village in the Persian Gulf. Now, it is everywhere. Now, one of the wealthiest cities on the planet, especially for how new it is. Burj Khalifa, the building alone, is known to everyone as this arrogant phallic symbol. The late 1990s, well, I don't even think in the 90s, but starting maybe 15 years ago at the most, Dubai just began to be, you know, the investments poured in from all over the world, especially from the Jews. Everything was the most luxurious, the largest, the greatest. You were stepping into something completely non-Islamic. The Emirates Airlines were everywhere. Celebrities were flown in. Western franchises were everywhere, are everywhere. Everything was totally globalized. Someone wrote that Dubai became a dream simulator. Daniel Cohen from The New Yorker asked, why are all these beauty influences suddenly in Dubai? Forbes has a headline that says, why have the world's wealthy suddenly moved to Dubai? And on and on and on and on. Why? Well, I think these writers know the answer, but they can't talk about it. Chances are they don't, or they repress it. Either way, they can't write about it. Nothing is trendy, especially in finance, and God knows in the Middle East, without the support of the Jews. It has to do with the United Arab Emirates and the normalization of its relations with the Zionist entity, even today. This wealthy Arab state, even in the midst of the Gaza slaughter, is making way too much money for the Judaization to stop. Furthermore, it is the place for wealthy Jews to run. Wealthy Jews living in Israel have no faith in the system there. Zero. They're flooding the country. This is a very dangerous game the Emirates are playing. Yeah, money is pouring in. They're taking a chunk, but they're letting the Jews in huge numbers, and that is a dangerous game. Now, what's really going on here? The UAE and Israel have had clandestine dealings with one another for many years. Now, the buzzword is called normalization with a capital N. They don't usually spell it with a capital N because they're idiots, but normalization is a technical term referring to complete full relations and even free trade agreements between Israel and what used to be Islamic societies. Mainstream media outlets are waxing poetic about the new travel opportunities and the new ties that Israelis are finding it hard to hide. And they're the ones who are building these things. They were enemies. They were enemies for a long time. And it's not just finance. Arms contracts are massive. Full access to Israeli weapons, at least most of them, and repression technologies. At one point, UAE didn't have full access to these kind of things. But normalizing relations with Israel and making that public today, well, they're going to need repressive technologies. Now, there is a free trade deal, and I have the document. It's 900 pages. Free trade deal. Of course, the states control every aspect of trade and finance, but it's a free trade deal. But UAE has been dealing with Israel for two decades, regardless of Israeli behavior and repression anywhere else. The Israelis have been selling all kinds of weaponry to the Emirates. Now, at one time, this was under the radar, but not anymore. Initially, the leadership of this was these multi-billionaire Jews, Mati Kochavi, David Midian, Avi Lumi, handful of others. They were the pioneers over there. And they brought with them the latest in Israeli military technology and surveillance technology. Rafael, for example, or Elbit systems, AnyVision, whatever. The UAE, they're going to struggle to hold on to their Islamic identity. This is incredibly stupid on their part. The good news is, of course, that Iran has a new target, although, of course, they've known about this for a very long time. The UAE is kind of a postmodern Islamic authoritarian state. Going under the radar is fairly easy. But what are the main reasons? UAE is doing this because they're buying Israeli technology to spy on the non-citizens. Now, understand this. Arab Gulf monarchies. Let's just stick with the UAE for now. Oil pays for everything. All medical care, they have no taxes of any kind. Education is free all the way up to the doctoral level. Citizens, they don't pay anything. Oil pays for everything. But who's a citizen? Of the population of the UAE, 11% are citizens. In other words, all of these benefits only refer to that elite oligarchy. The rest are often, they're Arabs often, sometimes they're from the East, sometimes they're from India, Pakistan, many of them Palestinians, they're serfs. They have absolutely no standing, and that's roughly 90% of the population. So they better get repressing real fast. Now, we could take bets on how long it's going to be before the Jews moving there piss everyone off. But how many of your typical Arabs, citizens or otherwise, in the Gulf states think that this is a good idea? It's a shame of the Arab world. We used to talk about Islamic banking. Well, that's long gone as far as the UAE is concerned, and I'm sure they've rationalized their new concern with usury. 2016, the Israeli group NSO sold its Pegasus 3 spyware. And what the UAE did was use this to hack into the computers and phones and everything else of the Emirati dissidents. And the most famous of these are Ahmed Mansour. Now, he was convicted and sent to prison for the charge of undermining national unity. And that was in 2017. He was sentenced to a decade. and he has been in solitary confinement for a long time. Emirati military intelligence has been training the Kurds in northern and eastern Syria over the last few years, showing you just how deeply integrated with the regime these Arabs really are. This is what normalization really is. The point of, from the Arab point of view, is that since no one likes these leaders, this tiny handful of actual citizens, and even among them, a minority who think this is a good idea, the leadership has to bring as many of these internal surveillance items to bear on their population as possible. Very few Arabs want any of this. They didn't ask for it, and yet they're going to suffer for it, as we all know. I mean, who knows the Jews better than these people? And they've learned nothing. So around that same time, they asked the Israeli Asia Global Technology company run by Kochavi, who I mentioned already. He set up a full surveillance system in Abu Dhabi called the Falcon Eye. We'll take a guess. Now, the public aim, the propaganda aim, was to monitor traffic and unlawful gatherings. We all know what it really is. Every person, especially every citizen, but every person living in the UAE is monitored. From the moment they leave their front door to the moment they return to it, and how long will it be before it actually is on the inside too, and the various methods they'll do that. Falcon Eye tells you all you need to know. Mossad is all over the area, Abu Dhabi as well as Dubai itself. The UAE has a, I guess the word is shady, the dark matter corporation. It's constantly hacking its own citizens as well as the poor Palestinians who really hate it. They're serfs, essentially. They have no benefit of citizenship, as I've already mentioned. And they're also very upset with Qatar and Turkey. Turkey has cut off trade as much as humanly possible. Turkey was a lifeline for Israel for a long time. Now, let me quote from the propaganda here from Dark Matter. Well, actually, this is coming from Press TV, the Iranian site, but here's what they say. This relationship, meaning UAE and Jews, expected to grow stronger under this new deal, paving the way for increased surveillance and policing speech, not just domestically, but regionally. All that cyber technology supported by the Israelis, run by the Israelis, and even worse, it's run by Israeli intelligence services and previous Mossad operatives who are working closely with the Emiratis and who, without doubt, share the information with Israel itself. They're pieces of information Israel needs to know. So basically what's happening is that not only oppressing their own population, their own dissidents, but also taking the Emirati secrets and sharing them with Israel. There are no more secrets in the UAE. Everything's in the hand of Israel, and everything is directed towards whatever the Emirati regime wants. So today, you know, there's no need for any kind of prudence. Now, the latest project is for the Emiratis to get the Iron Dome technology. I guess no one told them that this is a failed anti-missile defense system. Now, Netanyahu, according to Haaretz, who is an enemy of Netanyahu, assigned Meir Ben-Shabbat, the head of the Israeli National Security Council, to take care of these arrangements with their very wealthy Emirati customers. Again, this is what normalization really is. The Emiratis want the F-35. You know, the Saudis have always had an elite air force. There's not a whole lot of people that they trust. The armies are always very small, despite having a lot of people. Non-citizens aren't going to serve in the army. So they need other forms of weapon systems like the F-35. State Department, May of last year, approved the sale of 5,000 used mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles to the UAE. A big newspaper in Israel, the Yodath Anaroth, the shambolic peace deal included a secret clause allowing the UAE to buy the F-35 fighter. Crown Prince of the Seven Emirates Mohammed bin Zayed, agreed to the American peace deal on the condition, with the Israelis, I mean, many years ago, on the condition that his country be granted access to everything that the U.S. had, militarily speaking, both for foreign affairs as well as especially for domestic affairs. So Netanyahu, for a while, expresses opposition selling the F-35 to Abu Dhabi, but that's not the case anymore. Keep in mind, much of Israel has been destroyed. So whatever was a trickle of Israeli billionaires before, millionaires and others, now it's a flood. I think the Israeli, Netanyahu pretending to oppose it is just that. I think it's a big act. They know that they're, you know, allies now, and it's not a big deal. The only thing that the Jews may fear is the overthrow of the government in Abu Dhabi, which is a substantial fear. Now, this is so maddening. Somehow, Donald Trump, during the campaign, believes that this Israeli-UAE deal, normalization deal, is going to get him reelected. Now, since when do these obscure foreign initiatives elect presidents? How could anyone think something like that? Well, maybe if it affects these Israelis in a positive way. It's conceivable. Frankly, I think the opposition of the F-35 is a big act. And of course, I guess he hasn't heard that the F-35, the F-16, numerous other jets have been annihilated in Ukraine. So I suppose the Arabs have other uses for them, but whether there's opposition or not, there's not a whole lot on the market anymore. The UAE, their defense budget, or I should say their military budget, increases massively every year. If a fairly small country with the annual budget of around $23 billion American dollars. $20 billion of that going to arms purchases from all over the world, especially the U.S. and Israel. Now, there's a former State Department official who I've never heard of before, Tamara Kaufman, with a C. She's describing the UAE Crown Prince, and here's what she says, for what it's worth. We have created a little Frankenstein. Now, she means a monster, not Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein. The monster didn't have a name, but obviously she's an idiot. So the UAE spends $23 billion every year and $20 billion only to procure arms for the United States, from the United States. And when what they hope to do with the Israelis is basically nothing other than what they continue to do. What have they done? It's forced their population to adapt to normalization with the Israelis, and they're not going to get more weapons than they already have. Well, that's bullshit, but... And what do they use their weapons for? We saw the involvement of the UAE in the attacks on Yemen and in Libya. And we see the Emiratis trying to be present in other platforms and countries in the Middle East just to impose their presence and try to get some benefit to dominate the Middle East region. And, of course, she doesn't say it, but along with Israel. And they think that with the help and support of Israel, it is possible to boost their presence and influence in the Middle East. That last line is significant. I'm shocked that she said it, which may be why she's a former State Department official. Anyway, you're talking about a group of people, these Arabs, with almost bottomless pockets for now. They have an extraordinary appetite, is one way to put it, for weapons and technology for surveillance. They're absolutely paranoid, so paranoid that they're willing to make peace with a vicious enemy, who, of course, deep down hates them, for these systems. And the UAE really is an ideal client. They could charge them whatever they want. Abu Dhabi is set to further enrich U.S. and Israeli arms dealers. Now, I want to keep in mind that this was written prior to the war with Iran. I'm not entirely sure, since I think the censorship law, the enhanced censorship law, it's still in effect. You can't really show what's going on in Israel, how much has been destroyed. This is before that. So that's all changed. Nevertheless, it will continue when and if Israel is rebuilt. I have the feeling that this Dubai and parts of the UAE are going to be a, and since, you know, New Khazaria in the Crimea is out of the question, this may be at least part of the solution. Now, I said what a dangerous game this is. When you let them in, here's what happens. Saudi Arabia has started stepping up arrests of those criticizing the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Saudi Arabia is doing this now. They're already in normalization talks, just like the UAE. And I read something from India's Business Standard, citing people from inside and outside Saudi Arabia. Arrests have been made all over the country for anyone who criticizes any of this stuff on social media or elsewhere. These are relatively new laws. There was one very wealthy executive, so no one can escape this, who had, quote, expressed views on Gaza and the conflict there, deemed by the authorities to be incendiary. Another was a, quote, media figure. And this media figure said that Israel should never be forgiven for waging this war in Gaza, of course. And there was something else, someone calling for a boycott of American fast food in Saudi Arabia. Well, you don't need the Gaza war to want McDonald's out of anywhere. But that's how bad it is. This is what happens when you start normalizing your country with Israel. This is just the beginning here. These sheikhs and princes, they're not stupid. They are paranoid. They are being impulsive. And I think they know a lot more than we do as far as how shaky their power is. Hence, they either can go to the Iranians or they can go to the Jews. Even among the citizens. Now, it's different. You have the same situation in Saudi Arabia. There you have like 45% of the population are actual citizens. It's worse in the UAE. You still have largely a Palestinian working class that has no rights whatsoever. Now, last year, no more, but last year, there was more speculation that, you know, immediate normalization between Saudi Arabia and Tel Aviv. And it's proven by the fact that critics of this are being thrown in prison. What does the Jews have to do to Arabs? We're talking about, just in Gaza alone, 250,000 deaths, mostly women and children. That doesn't bother them, apparently. They're still willing to make these, not make the Israelis wealthy, but arrest their own wealthy people, elites, on their behalf. What do the Jews have to do here? What do the Israelis have to do? How far do they have to go? And how long do these regimes have? When you have a tiny ruling class who lives in luxury, and I mean luxury, and now connected with the Jews, connected with Israel, and this mass of Arabs who have no rights whatsoever, who do the actual work. And that'll include Dubai itself, you know. It's a serf society, essentially, with none of the good parts of serfdom. Now, Raja in Saudi Arabia, Raja, meaning the capital of Saudi Arabia, has indicated that it, and I'm quoting here, remains open to warmer relations if Netanyahu withdraws troops and commits to the establishment of a Palestinian state. The Saudi arrests of Gaza-related posts indicate that the regime of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman will take a hard line against citizens, not towing the line when it comes to normalizing ties with Israel. It wasn't that long ago where bin Salman was a hardliner. Now, let's make fun of this for a little while. This is a ruler of Saudi Arabia. How long have they been demanding the abandonment of the occupied territories, only to be told to shut up over and over again? But now they think that if they say something, it's going to happen in the establishment of a Palestinian state. Who are they talking to? This is propaganda. They know that that's never going to happen. I mean, clearly, Hamas is winning. Iran is winning. Israel's in serious trouble. Its existence is at stake, which is why Dubai exists. well, I don't have to tell you this, but 2% of young Saudi Arabians support any of these policies. I don't need a survey telling me that. I have the survey right here. I didn't need a survey at all. New to you. The Economist of London, which is a essentially a spokesman for Rothschild family, they did mention the highlights of the 2023 Arab Youth Survey. Now, the point of publishing this is essentially coming up with ideas of how to overcome domestic obstacles, that's a quote, which they consider significant for the normalization of ties between Israel and the two powers. Well, the UAE is done. Saudi Arabia, who is a huge disappointment. And they say even a near-absolute monarchy has to take some account of public opinion. Can you imagine having to actually say that to somebody? And I reiterate, 2% of young Saudi Arabians support anything like this. That comes from the same Arab Youth Survey. Now, what is Saudi Arabia's claimed agenda here? They claim that it's a new strategic alliance with the U.S. Oh, and get this. The kingdom also pushes for developing a nuclear energy program as part of the deal with Israel. Really? I also wonder, this has occurred to me, that if Netanyahu is convicted, and there's a good chance that he will be, he could run to the new Israel in Dubai or something like that. Not to mention the fact that it's possible that in this normalization push, his reputation, at least worldwide, will be somewhat repaired. I think that's nonsense. I don't know who's saying these things, but these are kind of very vague things that are being said by the Economist of London. Same article said that the potential for an American-Saudi-Israeli agreement may be vast, but the potential window for achieving it is very small. UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco all signed normalization agreements in 2020. Now, of course, this led to endless condemnations, and rightfully so, from Palestinians, not just in Palestine. The war in Gaza hasn't changed any of this, by the way, because that border was sealed in 2006. Nothing's changed here, except it's just been so public. But in Sudan's case, yeah, so that Sudan is in the fifth world. This, you know, it's like Ukraine, it has no functional economy. Any loan, any assistance, any aid whatsoever is tied to normalization. And that has a lot to do with some of this stuff. Now, I'm guaranteeing you that elites all over the place in all of these countries are looking to BRICS, looking to Russia and China as a possible alternative to this, if they could stay out of prison long enough. Salman and the guys from, you know, Zayed from Abu Dhabi, what do they think is going to happen? They know the Jew, they know them very well. But these guys, these billionaires went over there, promised them the moon. Well, we'll get to this in more detail, but this is, you know, of course, Israel has yet to leave Gaza. Hamas isn't going anywhere. And the IDF is in as much trouble as Israel is in more generally. Now, it's only this tiny elite, a fraction of the citizenry, the UAE and even Morocco, that support anything that their governments are doing. Now, here's something interesting. Young Arabs in Egypt strongly favor normalization with Israel. That's from the very same company. The Arab Youth Survey deals with not just the Middle East, but North Africa, to gauge the overall attitude of the Arab world's largest demographic, which is its young people. 75% of young Arabs in the UAE, 73% in Egypt, and 50% in Morocco strongly support or somewhat support ties with Israel. Now, they're being very vague here. Normalization ties or just ties? There's something weird here. Only 2% in Saudi Arabia 75% in the UAE, 73% in Egypt. What is going on here? Why this radical difference in numbers? One of these polls are faulty, or more is going on. Now, I went to the Arab Youth Survey website, and of course, things are a lot more complicated than these stupid articles will tell you. These very same young Arabs, whether it be in Egypt or Morocco, the overwhelming majority of them see Israel as their main enemy. So they're full of it when it comes to normalization. I think they're simply lying. 86% say that Israel's their number one enemy. So how could these huge numbers support normalization? Then, a headline for the 2023 poll says, most Arab youth oppose a normalization of ties with Israel, but those in the UAE, Morocco, and Egypt strongly support it. No explanation. So these same people see Israel as their main enemy, but also want to increase ties. Something is wrong here. Oddly, though, only 25% see the U.S. as a strong enemy, which makes everything even more confusing. Now, the Arab Youth Survey, which is an NGO, and the institute which controls it, are financed with the, at least have very strong ties with Western powers, financial ties, that is. It's a safe bet that the 2% is a true figure for all but the urban surf-owning elite in Dubai. It gets worse, though. It's not just their, you know, as I said, the normalization is nothing new, especially for the UAE. Gazans are starving to death. And as that's going on, these rich Arabs are facilitating the expansion of these settlements in Palestine, especially in the West Bank, but they are helping to finance the genocide itself. Don't tell me that you have these huge numbers that support normalization. I know you. I know how to manipulate polls. I took statistics right up to the doctoral level, involuntarily, but I did. But it's hard to manipulate them to this extent. But remember, we're talking about, at least as far as the Gulf monarchies are concerned, only citizens can answer polls. These people, you know, the other Arabs who are not citizens, they have no role whatsoever. No, it's dangerous. And how long is it going to be before there's some pushback from the state? And then the Jews are going to go to the poor Arabs and mobilize them against whoever they don't like. How long is that going to take? They've been dealing with Israel for years and years and years. They have to be told this. They know that these are definite possibilities. Well, guess who is a major player here? It won't shock anyone to know that it's Jared Kushner. Saudi and UAE governments, through Kushner's affinity partners, have become major shareholders in an Israeli company called Phoenix Holdings. Phoenix Holdings is involved in the construction of the settlements in the West Bank, Golan, not to mention investments in Israeli military installations, and I can only assume the rebuilding of the Israeli economy and its infrastructure. So it's a lot more than just, you know, having a massive Jewish colonies all over the Arab world. They're actually involved in building up the settlement movement and all of this. Now, the largest arms business in Israel is Elbit Systems, which is owned by Phoenix Holdings. And I say owned, they have about 2 million shares. More than 85% of the drones used by the Israelis in Gaza are supplied by Elbit. The sole institutional shareholder in that firm is Phoenix. 15% of Camp Ariel Sharon, which is the training systems for the occupation forces, is owned by Phoenix Holdings. Now, I have the feeling a lot of this lay in ruins. Not even mentioned BlackRock yet. they may be a little bit more prudent here. This is the same company also assisting recent recruits. And they have something called Adopt a Soldier Program, or a project. It should be called, really, Adopt a Soldier That Doesn't Immediately Desert Project, to be accurate, but I don't even know if this actually exists. But so much is false. Their economy is false. It's based on usury. It's based on debt upon debt upon debt. But Phoenix Holdings has not only sponsored, but insured the infrastructure and building projects of these Israeli settlements. Not to mention offering financial services to the councils of settlers. So, for example, 80% of the commercial and complex system in Ramat, which is a large settlement colony in East Jerusalem, is owned by Phoenix. You're starting to see connections here that, you know, this is what Michael Collins Piper used to do. Phoenix provides funding for the wind energy power plant located in the in Golan. Whether that still exists is another matter. Affinity Partners, of course, is another matter. Has Saudi backing. Is currently a large shareholder in Shlomo Group. I'm not making this up. There is something called Shlomo Group, which shockingly is an Israeli corporation. They are part of the Israeli Navy. They have the shipyards that build the newer ships and submarines of the Navy. They also supply Israeli military units. And there's no question that they are you know, they support and train Al Qaeda and Iraq and ISIS and all this. Now they also have a new drone company, Highlander Aviation. They received $14 million in investment from the UAE through their Edge Group armaments. Israel uses this airspace management systems to control the skies above Gaza and elsewhere. By the way, this is no one else, at least, you know, amongst our people, are talking about this at all. If all of a sudden people are talking about this without mentioning me, once this comes out, please mention, say that, you know, can you just say thank you to Dr. Johnson here, please? This is an ongoing problem. But no one's talking about this. Oh, but it gets worse. As of last year, I came across a report of the Israel Central Bureau of Statistics. When I publish this, I'll have the everything, you know, hot linked and all that. Exports from Egypt, the UAE, and Jordan have surged during the Gaza slaughter. They've gone up almost in precise proportion as Gazans are slaughtered. June of last year, the CBS, you know, the Statistical Bureau, said Egyptian exports amounted to roughly $25 million, to Israel, that is. Double the same period, just a year earlier. How many people there think this is a great idea? Don't tell me this normalization, that figure is nonsense. The same people who allegedly want normalization think that Israel is our enemy. Now, we're supposed to believe that Cairo has been a mediator between Israel and Hamas. I haven't seen that occur at any level whatsoever. Israel's going to do what it pleases. Who cares what Egypt says? Anwar Sadat was murdered over this in 1979. What else is going to happen when this stuff becomes better and better known? Again, there's a reason why the Saudi regime is just throwing anyone in jail. Talking about boycotting McDonald's? And that's what... Now, Cairo's also worried, of course, about Israeli plans to force Palestinians and Gazans, I should say, to relocate Sinai Peninsula, but that hasn't happened, largely because the IDF doesn't have the strength to push them out of there. This war is largely lost, so they figure, well, if we could kill all of them, we're in trouble enough as it is. Why not just go all the way then? We know they're using poison gas. We know that they're all kinds of things like this. Israel managed to capture the Gaza side of the Rafah border crossing. And so, but all that meant was that they could strangle Gaza all the more. Emirati exports to Israel, no shock there, increased from, what, 240 million roughly in May of 2023 to 242 million, I think it's much higher than that a year later. But that's public. This isn't, you know, in the Gulf monarchies, most of these deals are not made public. We have no idea. You know, these deals are massive that they're signing over the last year or so. Jordan the same way. Massive exports to Israel in 2024. Same thing for today. $40 million, which is a big deal. You know, for, you know, the West isn't a big deal, but for them it's a big deal. The surge in Jordanian exports came while the country has been worried about and dealing with pro-Palestine rallies since the eruption of this war. They want the Israeli embassy closed, to end the 94 peace treaty, the destruction of normalization, etc., etc. You notice how the Arab survey didn't mention Jordan. One of the few countries to step up has been Turkey. Talk about a lifeline. Turkish exports dropped by more than half, and that spigot has been shut off now. Turkey's trade ministry imposed strict restrictions on exports to the bleeding Zionist entity over the war. And, you know, they should have been doing it for a long time, but this was the last straw. Of course, they're not a monarchy. Turkey, of course, is first world. The status of the Gulf monarchies has always been odd because their wealth comes from one place. For now, it's true that they're smart. I mean, they're investing in a lot of other things. They know the oil's going to run out eventually, but regardless of what the numbers say, the only country that really has cut substantially has been Turkey. Now, if anything's going to worry the Israelis and get them out of Israel, it's going to be that. Because no one is going to defeat the Turkish military at all in the area. And they have very good ties with Iran, by the way. Their NATO membership is formal. You know, it'd be pretty radical to dump it, because the French probably will. In the future, they had done it before. I don't know what any of these countries are getting out of NATO membership. NATO's a paper tiger anyway. And we all know what's going on in Gaza, but it doesn't matter. And it isn't as if, you know, these are short-term profits. Yes, that's true. From an already wealthy ruling elite. So they already have the money. And yet, UAE is allocating millions of dollars. Now it's $10 billion for direct investment in the Zionist entity in compliance with this contract signed under the Abraham Accords. Now, this is what I wrote back in 2020. This is more than 5 years ago now. Early 2020, I think. It's absurd for Zayed, I'm talking about the crown prince of the UAE, to think that this deal will make the UAE an important regional hegemon. Yet, in a false display of flattery, Kushner called Zayed the new leader of the Middle East as he showed up with an Israeli delegation to finalize these deals. In other words, he's using the prince's ego to get him to go along, despite opinion polls in the area showing large majorities against any of this. Still, ego is one of the more minor issues here. The ham-handed flattery certainly doesn't work on a relatively shrewd politician like Zayed. Well, his shrewdness is being put to the test right now. Now, I wrote that many years ago, and I'll repeat myself. Who the hell needs opinion polls to tell them that this is going to be unpopular among Arabs? It's going to take a lot of convincing for any normal person to accept that, you know, what half the youth of Egypt and Morocco. You know, Morocco doesn't even count here. Egypt does. That, you know, wants normalization while thinking that the Israel's their number one enemy. How long will it take to light a match? to this overwhelming majority of non-citizens who do all the work, all the real work in places like Dubai. Dubai is structured very much like the rest of the UAE, except that it's just targeted for Israeli billionaires. That's why it's so trendy. This is why it's everywhere. This is why you see every celebrity. This is Jewish power and Jewish panic. This is a playground for these people. They don't live in the real world. What they often forget, though, is that you have a huge army of non-citizens who are doing all the work in the hotels and the malls, who have no citizenship rights whatsoever. But they have to watch Jews, we'll talk about this here in a minute, who have all citizenship rights and then some. It's a so-called golden visa. UAE, one of its biggest military contractors is the Edge Group. Edge. And I guess, is that... and they're connected with Israel Aerospace Industries. And among many other things, they're dealing with both naval and air assets. The sheer number of corporations here that are intertwined between the UAE and Israel is extraordinary. The co-president of the UAE-Israel Business Council is named Dorian Barak. He says, now again, this is just before Iran flattened, you know, a lot of Israel, but he said he wants to see, or expects to see, about 1,000 Israel-owned companies, 1,000 of them, operating in the UAE pretty soon. Now, the fact that Israel's been flattened may just increase this, because capital is fleeing Israel in huge amounts, as I said years ago. I mentioned Elbit Systems, that has their own subsidy in the UAE, subsidiary in the UAE called, it's the same thing, Elbit Systems Emirates. And so now you have the full integration of the military-industrial complex between UAE and Israel. Mudabala, which is a UAE state-owned firm, has about 15% participating interest in the Tamar and Dalit leases. That's the gas field, Tamar. This is an Israeli connection. This is Israeli territory. And this was, the main company here was Pentango Venture Partners, which at one time was called Polaris Venture Venture Capital, founded in 93 by Chemi Perez, who was a son of Shimon Peres. There's another firm called Synaptech, closely connected with the Israeli military. The chairman of Synaptech is former war minister, military chief of staff, Moshe Yalon. There is no, I don't even know how you would now disengage UAE and Israel unless the faction who wants, you know, Russia and China are their only options. And via Iran. Those are their only options. Why in heaven's name would they say no to this? I mean, don't they see what's happening in the U.S.? Don't they see what's happening in Israel? Who's winning here? Another one. Third Eye Systems. Guess what that's all about? This is about AI-driven, whatever that means, electro-optical networks. Now, the claim is, that's for detecting drones and unmanned aerial vehicles. Not technology to detect drones. That's been around forever. I think it's a lot more than that. Third Eye is far more important, and they're deeply involved in the Edge Group. Edge Group doesn't sound like an Arabic name to me, but of course, they finally admit what this really is. It has really nothing to do with drones. It's object recognition. Well, you know, you could fill in the gaps there. What does object recognition mean? This isn't about drones. This is about people. So Third Eye CEO, obviously a Jewish name, Lior Segal, said this technology and this security partnership sends a strong message about the capabilities of our AI-driven products, their contribution to national security. Partnering with globally recognized supplier like Edge will help us showcase Third Eye Systems' technological advantages and further expand our footprint and additional international markets. Now, guess who the president of Edge is? This is absolutely not an Arabic name. Rodrigo Torres. the hell's going on? So of all the countries that have normalized with Israel, even right at this second, it's the UAE with Saudi Arabia right behind them. Unfortunately for these people, you do have plenty of Emirati companies who don't like this. I'm not even talking about these deals and the money. I'm talking about having this massive colony of Jews in their country. Abu Dhabi is always condemning Israeli military operations in Gaza while profiting from it at the same time. These condemnations, these are ritual acts. This is nonsensical. So let me. It's even worse. How do these people, these sheikdoms, how do they defend this? Well, you could probably imagine how stupid it is, but it's stupider than that. UAE and Bahrain, they were, well, since Egypt and Jordan, you know, 79, 94, respectively, the UAE and Bahrain then were the next group. Again, remember, any kind of Western assistance, loans, any kind of connection whatsoever is tied to this normalization. But these guys, and I know Salman knows, that this is a sinking ship to begin with. Remember, the Abraham Accords, that is the normalization deal. And the UAE was the main target because there's a tremendous amount of liquidity there. And these Jews are saying, yeah, we know that the oil's going to run out soon. We can keep you in power. We know how everyone hates you. We're used to being hated. So we'll keep you in power. Just make sure that we are treated as citizens. We don't have to pay any taxes. I don't think that's the entire matter of Dubai, but that's a huge chunk of it. Now, here's what these people say. Emirati leaders say that these connections with the Israeli military, that will allow, I can't even say it, that will allow them to push for a just settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Do you really think that was their motive here? Of course, there were zero changes in Israeli policy. Everything got worse. They pretended to be surprised at this. They also claim that these weapons contracts, that's going to contribute to regional security. Now, I don't know if this is another way, probably just another way of saying we could fight Iraq, fight Iran, and I guess Iraq too. But if Israel lost, they're going to lose. And guess who's going to side with the Iranians? The millions of Arabs who work in Dubai, and God knows what the Jews do to them. The other claim is that the Abraham Accords give the UAE some influence in, get this, signaling discontent at Israel's policies in Gaza and, quote, raising the cost for Israel, for Israel's military operations there. Really? Do they really believe? There's no way they believe this. They can't believe this. No way. Under no circumstances will Abu Dhabi pull out of this. The UAE is going to have to fall apart first. I don't know what Turkey's role in that might be. I don't care. I hope it does fall apart. They deserve it. Now, Bahrain has allegedly suspended trade with Israel. I don't think it matters nearly as much. But I don't think anyone believes, anyone could possibly think, that any of this even entered into the minds of the Israeli military as the war progressed, whether it be with Lebanon or Gaza, or Syria for that matter. But there's been zero signal from Abu Dhabi that these elites want to overturn the accords. Because they believe, according to them, the strategic benefits outweigh the costs. So as of 2022, I think the population of the UAE is about 10 million. What's odd about it is that 69% are male. That's a huge percentage. But remember, that includes everyone, not just the citizens. Among eligible voters, the division is far more equitable. Now, why is that the case? Well, because their working class that has no citizen rights comes from all over the Islamic world. as far away as Indonesia. And men usually come alone and then send money back. That's why there's this weird imbalance there. Since 2019, it gets worse. There's a gender quota. There's a 40-member federal national council. And for some reason, 50% must be female. I don't know why or how that matters. But that clearly came out of these accords as well. And I think Israelis have a big part in that. The Emirati elites believe that these normalization efforts, or at least this is their, public propaganda, that these can lead to more harmonious Middle Eastern relations, which is a term that I think really means profit maximization. Even now, the leadership there says that these accords, even today, I can't believe, will help consolidate a more peaceful and interconnected region under Israel, with themselves and the Saudis as junior partners. That also means that the UAE sends a clear message to the Americans that, it's reliable and you could sell it whatever you want. The International Crisis Group, this is a woman, she seems to be new to all this. Her name is Dina Safrandi, Vendari, whatever the heck it is. Here's what she says. The Emirati leaders did not sign the accord primarily as a means of advancing a two-state solution or assisting the Palestinian national cause. Well, they did cite these objectives as an additional justification. Really? Well, I'm really glad you informed me of this. Yet from the outset, it was unclear what price the UAE can extract from Israel on a Palestinian front or how much effort Abu Dhabi would make to do so. The Emirati leaders claimed that they had persuaded Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, we know, just say Netanyahu, not to act on this threat earlier in 2020, to formally annex the West Bank. But Israel asserted that it had merely put the move on hold while proceeding with this de facto annexation of the territory by building new settlements. So what's happening so far is that what she doesn't quite get is that there's a bit of an act going on, Netanyahu's a part of it. Anyway, in 2023, the Emirati ambassador to the U.S., Yusuf Utabia, who was one of the spearheads of the normalization talks, admitted that Israel had agreed only to pause annexing the West Bank, thus contradicting an earlier statement it had made in signing the accords. Oh my God, really? Immediately to stop annexation. Palestinian officials criticized the UAE for failing to obtain a binding commitment from Israel and, on the contrary, helping normalize de facto annexation. No, you idiot, they did. It was right in the documents. Binding commitment, what does that mean? Words on a page? We didn't give a damn about that. Palestinian officials, you didn't get a binding commitment. Like the Jews are going to worry about a binding, what is that? Did she just discover this issue? We're told that criticism of the accords has heightened during Israel's genocide in Gaza. Really? My Lord. As I said before, both in Raja and Abu Dhabi, there's a huge pushback on this. Israeli behavior embarrasses anyone who signs the accords. Of course, Netanyahu did nothing that he promised, in writing or otherwise, concerning these accords. Of course. These Arabs pretend like this is a big shock to them. Displeasure with the UAE's approach has reached a boiling point. Well, the UAE didn't know this beforehand? Where are they from? It's like these are aliens that have taken over, have no idea what's going on in the area. Oh my God. And they continue to defend this relationship even right now. Oh, and get this. They claim that this allows them to provide assistance to people in need. Yeah, but the Gaza border has been sealed since 2006. What are they talking about? The crisis group, an Emirati businessman, said this. Quote, we didn't abandon the Palestinians. Relations with with Israel allowed us to mobilize and provide humanitarian aid quickly. That's what he said. The claim is that within a week after the war began, UAE sent a plane carrying medical supplies to Arish in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, and also allocated more than $34 million in aid for Gaza. Now, many of you know how that's utter nonsense. They also claim that the UAE has evacuated children for medical care and constructed a field and maritime hospital, I think in Gaza, they don't say, as well as a desalinization plant to overcome the water shortages on the Strip, which, by the way, has been destroyed by Tel Aviv long ago. The IDF wasn't permitting any of this at the time, not permitting any of this now. So this anonymous Emirati businessman is full of it, and he knows it. I know Americans believe anything that they're told, but this is Western donors suspended funding to the UN Relief and Works Agency because they were the main organization providing aid and assistance to Palestinian refugees. The reason? The so-called involvement of 12 employees in the Hamas attack. And that apparently didn't affect Abu Dhabi's contribution to the agency. Well, that might be true. But that's a far cry from, you know, creating these field hospitals and everything else. It is true that wealthy Arab states prior to the war and prior to 2006 were probably the main reason that Gaza functioned at all. But still, this had to be filtered through the IDF. What it comes down to is that the UAE Goyim actually believe that they have a direct line to Israel thanks to the Abraham Accords. They actually believe that this relationship with Israel puts it in a strong position to reconstruct when this war is over, like the Israelis are going to win it. Abu Dhabi has made it clear, and they're not going to follow through. They've been saying this forever. They'll help reconstruction only if there's a viable two-state solution plan. Well, they know that this can't happen. So who are they talking to here? This is more PR nonsense. There's another unnamed academic. God. He said that this is a way, this normalization, it's a way that Israel can see itself connected to the rest of the region, whatever that means. In the UAE's rationalization, by building a stronger relationship with Arab countries in the region, Israel will come to feel less threatened. And as a result, will be more willing to assist the Palestinians. Now, why should Israel ever feel less threatened? After 70 years of Israeli crimes, these Arabs still have convinced themselves that because they're in a very high-end and very profitable trading relationship, they could influence the IDF or whomever over there. And now that Turkey has refused to go along with any of this, that's a big deal. Now, some of this stuff comes from a lot of sources I have. When I publish this, I'll have all the bibliography and everything else. But this stuff is hard to find. Now, I've read a lot of their propaganda here, and it's really bad. The elites in places like Bahrain, Oman, UAE, Saudi Arabia, they are not stupid people. In all senses of that word. So they know a lot of this is nonsense. But they're making a lot of money. Of course, they were wealthy anyway. Don't underestimate what Jared Kushner said, that because UAE was the most integrated with Israel, and therefore all of these corporations and BlackRock and the U.S. and all this, that therefore the UAE is now the leader of Arabs in the Middle East, and maybe even the leader of the Islamic world in general. Maybe it had more of an effect than I realize. I don't know. Israel's new Med Energy, there's a new deal worth about $2 billion, which I think is the largest deal, commercial deal, between the two countries to date. You know, UAE goes on and on about what they're going to do to help the Arabs while financing the very people who are making them suffer. Somehow we're to be convinced that these connections will change Israeli calculations, and that somehow they can now start pressuring Israel to end the war. Well, it's worse than that, because now the Abu Dhabi, as well as to a lesser extent the Saudis, are more and more dependent on these foreign sources of immigrants. When you have such a tiny percentage of your population, actual citizens, they're constantly on guard. This is the area of weakness that the Israelis now can manipulate. Yeah, they do need new allies, that's for sure. So they have to give something. But this is why, and in detail, this is why Dubai has rapidly developed from this little fishing village 25 years ago to today, a luxury destination, now a safe harbor for Israel's wealthy elite. That's what Dubai is, and that's why it is. The migration of capital, not to mention just Jews living there, is a total realignment. Rich Israel, you know, Israel's in serious trouble. I've been saying this for a long time, usually by myself. Their rich are leaving the country in droves, and for very good reasons. So when you hear all this propaganda about Israel's winning this war, well, then why is this the case? And this is before the war with Iran that went very badly for the Israelis. Somehow, and there's pressure from the U.S. too in a lot of this, possibly from elsewhere. Because of the Abraham Accords, though, as a formal kind of structure, it kind of repositioned their political system and social system, I should say, really, more so, as a place where rich Jews can leave. Nukazadia has been killed by Putin's invasion, thank God. That's a huge deal. So that's in Ukraine is out of the question. Crimea is out of the question. Now it seems to be places like Dubai, and I know it's more than just Dubai. There's other cities too. Dubai just is by far the most dominant one. Clearly, this is why they're leaving. They don't think it's viable anymore. Millionaires and billionaires, as if their economy isn't bad enough, their billionaires and millionaires are gone. Most of what they own there is destroyed anyway. So there's a certain pressing need. For the first time, I mean, they had the tech boom in the 90s, yeah, that's one thing. But since then, this is an explosion of wealthy citizens who are not just investing abroad, they're leaving. They're leaving to such an extent that even the Gaza war hasn't changed anything. Netanyahu's aware of this. He's a little worried about it. It's possible that some of his resistance isn't an act. Some of it is. That pull of Dubai has grown tremendously. Now, as of last year, UAE has 6,700 millionaires, not Arabs. These are Jews. Handful of non-Jews from the U.S. This is record. This is a completely different world now. And this is just over a decade. You have to admit, this is excellent planning on the Dubai ruling class's part. Wealthy residents has surged by 100% in just a few years. No one comes close, not even Hong Kong in terms of population. And it's not just real estate and all this stuff. You're talking about, you know, you're talking about everything from equity partners and fund managers to BlackRock itself. Now, let me finish up here. I promised to explain what the Golden Visa is. It's pretty brilliant in a diabolical way. I mention it because I said that Jews moving to places like Dubai become citizens, sort of. They're certainly treated as citizens. They function as citizens. And it has to do with the so-called Golden Visa. You have about a 300% increase in Israeli clients seeking this. And you have a massive offshore relocation strategy based on it. The Golden Visa has to do with, of course, residency. It's called residency by investment. In other words, you buy your way in. And this is, you know, this is not exclusive to Jews, but it looks like it's exclusive to Jews. It allows foreign nationals to make an investment in the UAE. And then essentially you're buying a residence permit. And that's the Golden Visa. Now, how do you qualify for this? I've gone to their site. The name of the company now. I'll mention it some other time. But there's a huge, you know, exposure. Now, here's how it happens. You invest in the economy, and the way you qualify is that you invest their currency, the AED, which is a UAE dirham. A million of these, which is roughly, I don't know, $300,000 for Jewish investors, 55 and over. That's your five-year visa. You double that, and that's for any age, for a decade. Okay, there's something to that in the sense that this massive exodus of Israel's wealthy, yeah, it's driven by panic. It's driven by terror and paranoia. But this is far more than that. Israel is now bereft of by far its wealthiest citizens. This is a radical realignment. And as owning one of these golden visas means that you don't have to pay any taxes. The oil pays for everything, or when you buy into it through the golden visa, same thing. There's no personal income tax. There's no taxes at all. No annual wealth reporting obligations, nothing. This is far more, this is far tighter than any Swiss bank used to be. Now, in Israel, there's huge taxes, you know, to finance the security state. Well, they're going to Dubai and they pay zero. Well, they invest, but they get a return. So this isn't, yeah, of course, they're buying their way in, but they get this money back. Israel's been in trouble ever since Netanyahu got indicted and ever since he tried to clip the Supreme Court. They're losing the war. And Dubai now is essentially almost a new Israel. Dubai now has an international financial center, which operates not under Islamic principles, that's long gone, but English common law principles. And of course, everything is tax-free. You know, Islam, I think, at least in these parts of the UAE, is now mostly symbolic. I guarantee you they hire a bunch of these Islamic scholars to justify charging interest and things like that. And don't kid yourself, the Iranians are well aware of all of this. I can't wait for them to hit this area. The Iranians do what they did to the UAE, what they did to Israel. They're going to have millions of Arabic supporters who've been exploited by this government, by this social system. The propaganda, these pamphlets and these hedge fund PR firms talking about, you know, storehouse for capital, competitive launch pad for global financial innovation and all this garbage. No, they're now made themselves into a huge target. And the more that they pull this stuff, the more they're wildly exploited. Arabic underground, so to speak, hates them even more. This isn't temporary turbulence. This isn't a matter of this. This is not temporary at all. They're not going back. Why? This is going to happen again and again and again. And this is brand new. This is a shocking fact for Israelis who believe themselves to be part of this invincible Iron Dome, which doesn't work. IDF, which is so overstretched in desertion, huge casualties are not being reported as such. They know it, but, you know, press doesn't know it. This huge amount of wealth leaving Israel means that you now have, especially given the destruction over the last year, a third world country, increasingly so, because the money is now going elsewhere. It's easy for Jewish propaganda to say, oh, the Arabs are taking over. No, the opposite is the case. Jews are coming in. But this is what happens when you let them in. If Saudi Arabia is arresting people for these stupid causes, what's the UAE doing? And especially when they're buying these intensely totalitarian Falcon Eye systems and things like that. So for the first time in modern Middle Eastern history, Jewish billionaires are not simply investing abroad. They're abandoning the state of Israel. They're not just sending a message either to just, you know, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv. That geography doesn't guarantee loyalty whatsoever. Capital is power, and it moves where it's going to be most protected. Well, they're going to learn in the short term it's not going to be protected there. It won't be for long. The Iranians are going to have a say about this. And they're setting themselves up for a serious confrontation shortly. Especially, and I'm not sure off the top of my head how many of this underground, you know, the surf Arabs are Shiites. Many of them have been kicked out. I imagine that happened after Desert Shield, if you recall, Desert Storm. Shiite Arabs were thrown out. A lot of Palestinians were thrown out, but now who's going to do the work? I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime, but this is what's happening. And no one else is talking about this, and I'm very happy to bring this to you in my first Orthodox nationalist in a while. And I'd love to see what the Protestant fundamentalists are going to think about all of this. Hopefully that'll collapse as well. Thank you, my friends, for listening. Thank you for putting up with my absence. I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.